And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just something I've noticed. Bargain hunting is back. I mean, bargain hunting's always been around. We always love a great deal. But man, everywhere you look, people are bargain hunting. You know, there's so many great ways to find great deals. Hey, I have a great find in your bargain hunting journey. Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby, and truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price that's a real bargain when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That is a bargain. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today. Listen when and where you want if you can't listen live overnight. You know, this is a fascinating story. You know, we talk about the culture wars, but we forget about when the culture wars get mixed in with the economic world. And as, you know, we've talked about it before, the companies and have agreed to the, you know, the whole ESG investing, which is environmental, social, and governance orthodoxy, which means basically we're going to invest in companies that are leftist social justice, for leftist social justice causes, including many of these investment firms, into following the Paris Accord.
Yeah.
And you just had Vanguard's Tim Buckley, the Wall Street Journal, writing about it, who challenged the asset management management industry's environmental, social, and governance orthodoxy. Our research indicates that ESG investing does not have any advantage over broad-based investing, Mr. Buckley said in a recent interview with the Financial Times. Matching word to his deeds, his comments came after he had withdrawn his firm from the $59 trillion net zero asset managers initiative, an organization that is part of the $150 trillion United Nations-affiliated Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. Both alliances are committing to restricting their investments over time to companies that are compliant with the Paris Agreement's objective of a net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Mr. Buckley claims the financial world, swept up in climate change fervor, cannot make such commitments without reneging on its fiduciary duties. Duh! His assertions might not mean much if he were a small hedge fund manager or a climate change denier. He is neither, depending on how and when you measure. Vanguard is the largest or second largest asset manager in the world, pulling his firm out of the world's largest association of financial institutions dedicated to net zero goals should have seismic implications. What is it that Mr. Buckley knows that so many others don't? For one thing, he understands it's difficult for active managers to beat broad indexes, as most ESG funds promise. In investing, you get what you don't pay for. As Vanguard's founder John Bogle observed, intelligent investors will use low-cost index funds to build a diversified portfolio, and they won't be foolish enough to think that they can consistently outsmart the market. Mr. Buckley effectively claims that the ESG, as we like to say, liberal, social, well, actually, it's environmental, social, and and hang on here, governance orthodoxy, which
right.
means social justice.
Right.
He effectively claims that ESG managers are playing the fool and taking their clients' money with them.
No, we've seen this before. We've seen this before, where corporations jump into something, and then within a year or two, they back out and go, "Oh, yeah, we're going to not be doing that."
Black Lives Matter.
Yep. And how much money was spent? Because at the end of it, it's going to be this. For a publicly traded company, it's going to be, what is the shareholder going to get? What are you worried about when it comes to profits? What are you, as a company, designed to do? Well, you're designed to be profitable. And if you're going to bring in all this wokeness as a part of your policy as a company, expect that's going to affect your bottom line and expect that people will turn their backs. Here's the thing. Corporations thought they were going to find allies, that they were going to, and this is why I think they did it, and they jumped in with Black Lives Matter, and they take on a lot of woke things, but they will do a lot of marketing things along the way that they know appeal to people because it makes them look like a good steward in their community. Well, the problem is with these things is that they are clearly there to create more division. They are these types of policies that the far left is pushing for inside the corporate handbooks is what they believe they're going to get so that they can have greater control over these corporations and put greater pressure on them for their agenda. It doesn't work that way because you can't just throw money at something that's not going to get you more money in return without facing consequences as a company.
Terrence Keeley wrote this column in an op-ed piece for the Wall Street Journal. He's CEO of 1.6 LLC and author of Sustainable, Moving Beyond ESG to Impact Investing. And you and I talked about this when ESG first came out again. If you're going to be an investor, if you're going to be an investment group, you've got to practice diversification.
Yeah.
Sorry, but that's what you have to do.
Right.
Because that way you limit your damage and you hope to get consistent growth over a long period of time. And this may be one of the best lines ever written on ESGs. Last year, tech stocks fell by more than 30%, while the energy sector, including oil and gas firms, gained 60%. Yet because of their net zero pledge, ESG funds continue to overweight the former and underweight the latter. Rather than brace diversification and own a market-weighted amount of everything, here's the line right here, ESG funds practice diversification in quotes.
Yeah. Hmm.
Diversification, so they made up a word for that.
Right.
Clinging to a restricted list of companies and hoping for the best. It's what you and I said a long time ago. You can't do that as you're not going to be able to make money for your clients. And they're going to look at this and go, I'm going to go over there and make money over there. I'm going to Vanguard now. I'm not going to stick with you folks.
Well, that's it. And with any company that's going to take this on as a matter of practice, you have to measure your return. You know, there are some things that the makers of products can look at and they can say, we got behind something, and when we did, it increased our sales. You saw with Colin Kaepernick and Nike. Nike actually saw an increase. Now, I don't know if that increase has stayed. I don't know if that's maintained. I haven't heard that Nike is in peril, insolvent. As far as I know, their profits are still there. But when you look to jump onto something, those things have to be measured. So, okay, we're going to get behind it because this. Well, There's a small company named Disney that decided they were going to go down the woke path and that they were going to, they thought, take on the mean far right. And what they were really taking on were the parents, the ones who take their hard-earned money because their kids help direct them to the parks that they own and the entertainment they provide, and they spend that hard-earned money, and that's where it costs them.
Well, you know, it's really incredible because you can say that, you know, you look at this here with the ESGs, and I'm glad you brought up Disney as an example for how insane they'll be. And, you know, for example, we go back to Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. and the lie about police departments and the fact that all these companies followed right along with it.
Right.
And they were following the LeBron James, who would lie or not know what happened in a particular situation and make an assumption that helped to inflame riots.
Right.
And you think of the, you know, the corruption that we've now seen in Black Lives Matter, and now industry won't touch them.
Right.
But it was obvious, you know, you tread carefully before you do that. You think about Disney, and we told the story yesterday that's in DeSantis's book about the Disney CEO. Chap had called him, and they talked, and he said he doesn't want to be involved in politics at all, but we can't beat this. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, what are you talking about? If you actually read the bill, and you see the bill talks about teaching sexualized content to kids in kindergarten, 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 year olds, and you can't fight that as Disney, then get out.
Yeah.
If you can't see that if you endorse this bill, how you will cost your stockholders a ton of money, then you need to get out, because that's where your fiduciary responsibility, that's where it lies.
Yep.
With your stockholders.
Yep.
It just shows you how incredibly warped some of these CEOs are, that they can be influenced by things that if you had any type of self-awareness whatsoever, you would run. You know, you and I had the discussion yesterday. He wanted to stay out of the politics in it. You said probably would have stayed better, you know, to just stay out of it completely.
Right.
And just not mention it whatsoever and say, we just don't get involved in politics.
Everybody's welcome.
Right.
In Disney World and Disneyland.
But then there might be some blowback. Oh, so you're not going to take a stance on the fact of teaching sexualized content. You just say, no, we're just not commenting on what we believe, because that's not what we're selling. We're selling
right.
innocent fun to kids. But even if you did decide to get involved in it because you thought there was no choice, we need to fight this, 95% of parents are going to be on your side saying it's about damn time Disney took a stand for the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it reminded me sort of the story about, is Santa Claus real? And remember, Santa Claus goes to court and everything else. And, you know, do you believe in Santa? Do you believe in children and all that? Miracle on 34th Street. Yeah, exactly. That's what you should have done. We believe in kids, and we will not, you know, that's up to the parents what to do. We provide innocent entertainment, and we certainly aren't going to be advocating the fact that that sexualized content of any form should be taught in the schools to kids kindergarten to third grade. We stand for the innocence of children, and that's what we want to bring to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! I can see, just like on Miracle on 34th Street, they scan the streets of New York, and there's all those thousands of people cheering. Because
mm-hmm.
yeah. you can't win this. Instead, they bought into the Don't Say Gay that was a lie.
Right.
Complete lie.
And decided to go to war with parents.
And DeSantis told him it.
Yep.
He said, what you're fighting is a narrative that isn't real.
Right.
And he still went aboard there. So you see this here, and he says, most importantly, here for the ESGs, Mr. Buckley understands that progress towards net zero emissions doesn't depend on how people invest. Think about that. Politicians and regulators have a central role to play in setting the ground rules to achieve a just transition. Betting his clients' money on politicians and regulators to consistently do the right thing would be irresponsible. There is a receding chance the globe will be at net zero by 2050. No one should promise to base his entire investment strategy on such odds. Wow.
Well,
I mean, they're crazy. I'm sorry. They're crazy.
Well, because
they're crazy.
Here's the thing. If you're going to measure, you know, if because they want you to believe that the markets are measuring companies through ESG. It's like a pledge. Well, did you sign the pledge? Are you getting? Why aren't you wearing the ribbon? Imagine that you pay money to go to a sports arena. You're going to watch a game. Well, wait a minute. We need you to pledge that you're going to behave yourself. That you're not going to break the law while you're here. Well, I don't need to pledge that. I'm not. I'm got a ticket and I'm going to sit down. I'll get a hot dog and a drink. I'm going to cheer on my team. What did I miss? What they're doing is, because if you think about it, they're telling these companies, you've got to commit to this. If not, you're going to be judged much differently. We're going to carve you out as a pariah. That's the threat. You're not going to engage in this kind of behavior. If you're not going to be part of it, then we'll make sure you don't benefit. This is cancel culture on a massive, wide scale, and they're trying to make it seem like something noble.
Yeah, and it's, you know, look, the investors.
Environmental, social, and governance, and they want you to believe that, well, it's a noble idea, everybody's on board. Well, tell me who is saying, well, no, we're going to go in and steal people's money. Companies are in it to make money.
Investors are in it to make money.
Investors are in it to make money. And if you're trying to tell the world that, well, we're going to measure you and your earnings and everything else based on ESG and participation in that, that's going to go as well as the whole Black Lives Matter deal went. It's going to go down in flames.
866-90-RED-EYE.
A rare weather occurrence this past weekend. Heavy snows in Southern California.
Extremely rare heavy snow, high winds. First blizzard warning issued by the National Weather Service office in Los Angeles since 1989. And the first blizzard warning ever issued for the mountains of far Southern California coming out of the National Weather Service office in San Diego. Because of the high winds gusting to 60 to 80 miles per hour or higher, tough to measure the snow, but it did accumulate many, many feet in some of the higher peaks of Southern California.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says this system is the first in what is expected to be another week of active weather in the Golden State. The previous system was also unusual in that its path moved from north to south, starting in Alaska, bringing heavy snows across the West Coast and adding accumulations to already high mountain snowpack levels. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. Bargain hunting is back. I mean, bargain hunting's always been around. We always love a great deal. But man, everywhere you look, people are bargain hunting. You know, there's so many great ways to find great deals. Hey, I have a great find in your bargain hunting journey. Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby, and truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price that's a real bargain when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CP redeye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That is a bargain. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
The next time you're on Interstate 80, stop in and see the folks at the Iowa 80 truck stop at exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa. They're always open and ready to serve you. Enjoy a sit-down meal at the Iowa 80 kitchen or grab a bite from one of their 9 quick-serve restaurants. You'll love their clean restrooms, huge gift store, beautiful convenience store, and of course, the Super Truck Showroom, stocked with plenty of chrome, lights, and more. While you're there, don't forget to visit the Iowa 80 Trucking Museum next door. It's free. The entire team at the Iowa 80 is very excited to celebrate 60 years with you. They look forward to being your home away from home for another 60 years. Sending you a giant thank you from Iowa 80, the world's largest truck stop on I-80, exit 284 in Walcott, Iowa.
Iowa 80.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you would like to get in. Latest polling on some polling on Hunter Biden. We'll get to that here in a little bit, and also following the bottom of the hour. And also the Greater Idaho Movement. We talked about secession after MTG talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie Taylor Greene about the blue states should secede from the red states. And we said, what's going on with Oregon and those counties? Well, we have more on that. And you see, you saw the story on Tom Sizemore, the actor.
Yeah, a word coming out in recent hours the story is from Fox News and other sources that doctors have said that there's really nothing more they can do for him.
Yep.
And that the family at this point needs to make plans for end of life. And I don't know what that means specifically, but with a brain aneurysm, the news seemed to be bleak in the beginning. And in recent hours, learning that if that story is accurate, doctors are telling the family to prepare.
The IRS, the world's most aggressive collection agency. They can seize your property, bank account, and garnish your wages. They cause sleepless nights for millions of Americans. Don't be one of them. If you owe...
You're a threat to democracy if you don't download our app, Red Eye Radio.
Yeah. Just threaten people.
That's right.
Hey, since everything else in our society is coercion, why right. can't we use it? We'll demonize you if you don't download the app.
If you don't download the app, you hate animals.
Yes.
Puppies and kittens.
That's right.
Well, when Marjorie Taylor Greene, it was when she did the tweet, it was after the State of the Union address, I believe it was.
Mm, yeah.
On the blue states seceding from the red states. And we said, well, it's never going to happen. We've seen it before. I mean, we've been talk show hosts long enough to know that's what happens when people get frustrated. And there are major differences between the political parties right now. You had the governor of Arkansas when she gave the response to the State of the Union, say it's not between Democrat or Republican or right versus left. It's about common sense versus insanity. And when you see the liberal transgender activist movement out there, when you see critical race theory, when you see the divisiveness of identity politics, judging people by groups and not individuals, as the Democratic Party is now, it's now mainstream there. You look at it and you say the policies and the basic mindset is insanity.
Right.
And so, it's why people look and say, Well, where's the compromise? And if you can't have compromise anymore, if compromise is impossible, you know, where's the compromise on free speech? Well, no, we just want to, we believe in free speech, not just hate. We don't believe in hate speech. What's hate speech? Things that offend me. Well, that's the whole concept of free speech. And there is no compromising on that. So, you know, that's what happens when people get frustrated. We had mentioned during that discussion, and it was a great discussion, about the Oregon situation. I said, hey, what's going on with the states or the counties in Oregon? Well, the campaign to have rural eastern Oregon effectively secede from the blue state and join more conservative Idaho is gaining steam, not a lot of steam, but still I was, they actually got to this point, is gaining steam as leaders from both states express support for relocating the border between them. Former Oregon House Speaker Mark Simmons penned an op-ed in the Idaho Statesman, a daily newspaper, over the weekend to explain why he supports the so-called Greater Idaho Movement that seeks to incorporate about 13 Oregon counties, or 63% of the state's landmass, 9% of its population, within Idaho's borders. Idaho would have the satisfaction of freeing rural conservative communities from the progressive blue state law, wrote Simmons. We are dismayed by the manner in which Oregon government has marginalized our values and villainized our resource-based livelihoods. That is why our counties voted 75% Republican last year. Idaho voted 67% Republican. Simmons described how Oregon stores are selling drugs near Idaho communities and hurting the quality of life in the area, explaining that moving the state line would force drug shops away from most of Idaho's population and help eastern Oregonians. These counties would help maintain rural values in the Idaho legislature, values of faith, family, and self-reliance. All of eastern Oregon has voted against marijuana legalization and the decriminalization of hard drugs. Simmons' op-ed came after Idaho's House of Representatives earlier this month passed a resolution not to move the Idaho-Oregon border, but rather to call for formal talks between the state legislatures about relocating the boundary line. It's unclear if the bill will pass the Idaho Senate, but the chamber is, like the state's House, dominated by Republicans. Matt McCaw, a spokesperson for the Greater Idaho Group, said he's confident the measure will pass, expressing optimism about the movement's goals amid skepticism from many people. When you have a new idea, there's always a lot of people that will roll their eyes. They think it's silly to dismiss it. When we started out this 2 years ago, I would get that a lot, like, this will never happen. Why are you wasting your time? Others have expressed doubt, including lawmakers who voted for the measure approving talks. The reality is, I don't believe this will ever happen, said Idaho Republican Representative Lance Clow. In order to get this done, by the way, moving the Idaho-Oregon border would require the approval of both state legislatures as well as the U.S. Congress. Despite the support of Idaho lawmakers, the idea may face greater resistance in the Democrat-controlled Oregon legislature, and it will. They're not going to give up 63% of the state.
All right.
That's why it's not going to happen.
Not
going to
happen.
So, there you go. Still, proponents of Greater Idaho note that 11 counties in eastern Oregon have voted for ballot measures to explore the move, and that according to some polling, the people in Idaho would welcome expanding the state boundary in Oregon. Meanwhile, polling has shown roughly an equal number of voters support and oppose the idea, with about one-fifth of the population undecided. There you go. I'm not surprised that it's Oregon. You know, I've said this since I lived in Oregon for 3 years. It is really a unique state. Yeah. And as I said, I lived in Portland, but technically lived in Portland, but over the top is Sylvan Hill, which means I had the wilderness buffer between myself and downtown. I found Portland to be one of the most interesting states because, for example, if you get inside of inside of Eugene inside of Portland, I mean, you're talking, as I said, you're talking anarchist fascist, and then you move out.
Yeah,
it's like, and it's not exactly this way, but it's what it feels like. It's like the anarchist fascist, anarchist fascist terrorists. Then you have communist. Then you have then you have light communist. Then you, and you're moving a mile out. Then you have
communist light,
very dedicated socialist, mild socialist. You know, Democrat light, Republican. By the time you get 40 miles, 50 miles out, it's get the hell out of my face, libertarian. Mm-hmm. It's an extremely unique state. That has widely differing opinions in the rural areas from what is inside Portland or inside Salem.
Yeah,
it really is just you're not Salem, Eugene. Eugene, University of Oregon, things like that.
Right.
I mean, the mindset is just miles away, miles away. In fact, at times, like I said, when I moved to Portland, I lived actually, you know, in the city of Portland, it was like the furthest I've been away from the United States while living in the United States. But I go to Eastern Oregon, I go to Hood River, you know, you go any of the places out there, it's like, oh, okay, we have the same ideology. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's so different, though. It's a very, very unique place.
You know,
I'll have to ask my great friend and old colleague, Lars Larson, you know, well, if they separate, wait a minute. I think he's living in Washington State. So he's technically in
Washington. Is he commuting now?
I think he's in Washington State. Yeah,
all right.
So.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, then he's already on his way. He's seceded on his own. Well, but you look at the how the cultures, and we talked about this, it is... It's not unique for a state to have different cultures within it. But if you look at Oregon, it's one of those where it does go from far, far, far left to far right. Look, we have Austin, but it's a, what do they call it? Keep Austin weird. The way they say it.
No, they have the Portland. Too,
It's liberal. It's not Portland. And that's the difference when you get into, you know, I mean, Portland, you could probably right now
Even though Austin's really working hard for defunding the police.
Yeah, they have been for quite some time. Yeah. But they're still Texas. And, you know, it. They would like to secede, but... Yeah, they've got other things to do. But, you know, you look at Portland, and you could really carve out Portland as arguably the most liberal city. Tell me where I'm wrong on that.
Well, since I once lived in Western New York, and Buffalo is considered one of the most liberal cities, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It may be, Buffalo may be fiscally liberal in a fiscally liberal state, but it is quite socially conservative.
Mm-hmm. Even other major cities like New York City and Los Angeles, yes, they're liberal. Yes, they're blue. But there is something deeper all the way down to the rank and file. The people, well, literally on the street in Portland.
Remember the mayor and the city council during the riots?
Mm-hmm.
They sounded like they wanted the city of Portland destroyed.
Right.
You don't get that. You know, you didn't get that. You didn't get that, for example, and I'm using Buffalo because I live there, and they were a couple times voted as the most liberal city, and I went, no, they're not. You know, because even if they're Democrats and it's a Democrat-run city, they are socially conservative, and even the mayor, you know, when it came to the Molotov cocktail going into the city hall, all hell broke loose at that point.
Right.
I remember the activists and the cops where he claimed he was pushed over and those cops were exonerated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they did back the cops
right.
in there. There is,
right.
It's not the same. It's not the, they may be liberal, but here's the difference. Being liberal is one thing. Being insane liberal, as we've seen that evolution over the last 5 or 6 years, that's the difference.
Because it is in more concentrated form, really, if you look at Portland.
And Portland, it was insane when I was there 25 years ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah, by comparison.
With the radicals.
Right.
I'm talking about further, the radical left.
Yeah, the further that things on the left go left, the more radical Portland becomes. I could see the people of Oregon saying, look, we want out. We want to be able to, you know, elect a governor. We want to be able to, you know, as a state. But quite frankly.
And that's why I think it's even gotten to this point, is because it's the one place, you know, in the United States where you're talking about a difference of ideology that is completely concentrated in one small area, and the vast majority of the state that may be a minority of the population, but the geographical area is absolutely I mean, you probably can't find a place where it's almost 180 degrees opposite.
Yeah.
And
right.
So it doesn't surprise me that if there's going to be that push, it would be in Oregon.
It's almost like they've got their own San Andreas Fault. Right?
Yes.
That line. And there's that definite shift.
Technically, they do have the Cascades.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Listen to Red Eye Radio wherever you are with the Red Eye Radio app, available on Android and iPhone. Download it now from the App Store or by visiting us at redeyeradioshow.com.
Eric and Gary for the best-selling Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. It uses proven Oxy technology, quickly destroys odors. You'll love it. I love it. In fact, with over 265...
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carney, and I'm Gary McNamara. All right, new poll published Sunday shows 73% of registered voters believe Hunter Biden did something illegal or unethical in his business dealings in Ukraine and China. The poll conducted by Beacon Research and Sean Company Research between February 19th and the 22nd showed that 37% believe that Biden did something illegal, 36% unethical, 18% that he didn't do anything wrong, and 9% they don't know. So that's how you get to the 73% of registered voters believe Hunter Biden did something illegal or unethical in Ukraine. That's the problem the president has. Why? Because the Democrats' first response to me giving you that poll number was Hunter Biden's not president. Everything he does relates to enriching the Biden family, which leads you right to influence peddling.
Yep.
Which does involve the president. So it's not separate. They try to keep it separate by just saying, it's Hunter Biden, it's Hunter Biden. The View would do that.
Right.
But what's the point of The View?
exactly.
That article that was written earlier that we told you about. So
yeah.
That's the problem politically the president has there.
Yep.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.